Hi, welcome to Holistic Manners Podcast. Today, we're with Dr. Bassem El-Khador talking about magnesium and the variety of uses and needs for magnesium. Hi, Bassem. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, John. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So recently, there's been a lot of attention on the use of magnesium, and the National Health and Nutrition Survey recently reported that even up to 70 or 80% of the population may be undernourished or deficient even in the availability of magnesium. And so that brings on a lot of attention, because also at the same time, if you look at some of the recent uses of nutraceuticals, magnesium tends to be one of the number one nutrients, if you will, or minerals that are being used by patients and by practitioners. So tell us a little bit, first of all, what the foundational needs are and why is magnesium so important? Maybe why is magnesium even more important than maybe nutrition science and clinical nutrition has previously thought?
So John, magnesium is important because it's a cofactor with so many enzymes. Up to 300 enzymes have been identified that will require magnesium for them to function properly. The problem of magnesium in the past 20, 30, 40 years has been much more kind of important subject because of our food supply. The vegetables and fruits we are having start to be more and more deficient in magnesium. And what we're trying to do is try to find a synthetic form of magnesium to supplement these patients because they're not getting enough magnesium from their diet. The problem becomes even worse with more processed food, that actually we're depleting magnesium when we have all this processed and ready-to-made food and so on. So this problem becomes much more important, knowing the importance of magnesium in health and disease. So become like a really crisis in developing since like a few years now. And we're trying to find a solution, but we can talk more about why all the solutions are actually failing us and the patient remain magnesium deficient, or we still have inadequate intake of magnesium. Add to that most population in the US, they're really not consuming enough vegetable and fruit, which is the main source of magnesium. So all of that creates kind of public crisis.
Right. So it's kind of a concerning point that you raise, is that even for those people who are trying to eat well or select the right amount of fruits and vegetables, are already at a disadvantage and they can't get enough magnesium. So is there a difference in the forms of magnesium and the sources of magnesium that may provide a better benefit or greater bioavailability or just greater underlying support to reset the need for magnesium in the body?
Yeah, so when we try to supplement magnesium, we went and we tried to say, okay, so what form, what chelated form of magnesium we can as the best for human absorption and so on. And then we found like we have like a lot of type of form of magnesium. Magnesium bisglycinate, we have magnesium taurinate, we have magnesium malate, and the list goes on, magnesium oxide. And then we start to discover that some of them don't have very good solubility, especially if you have stomach acidity has been affected by age or by other medicine and so on. So it's very hard to dissolve this tablet. So we went to a more soluble form of magnesium and we found, okay, that's great. But some of the more soluble form of magnesium, some of them give you more GI issue because the dissociation is so strong, liberating a lot of free ionic magnesium that will draw more water to the intestine, creating diarrhea, GI distress, and this problem. So we want a more chelated form of magnesium in the hope that it can decrease GI issue. And then we found that some of them have strong chelation that your body unable to break the bond between magnesium and the ligand in such a way that you absorb the magnesium chelated form and then you excrete in the urine and your body remain magnesium deficient. And then we discovered that magnesium absorption is absorbed based on the ligand bind to it. So what type of ligand will determine which part of the intestine magnesium will be absorbed. And then we have a lot of patients, they have inflammation in the ileum, inflammation in the colon, we have Crohn's disease, we have other issues. Then we say, okay, so what form of magnesium is the best for this patient versus what form of magnesium good for everyone? So there's no form for everyone. And then we have to figure out, is this form good for you or it's not? And sometimes it becomes so challenging to figure out which form is best for you. That's why the other approach was, can we have a multi-form magnesium? Can we combine 4, 5, 10 different form of magnesium, would that work better? Maybe it worked better. But the best solution, again, to go back to the root of the problem, our magnesium level in our diet is decreasing. Maybe the best way is to have a nutritional, high level of nutrition, dense food. That could be the best way to go. And in this food matrix, we're going to have a multi-form magnesium in the sense that we have 100 of form of magnesium. Maybe that's going to be as nature intended for us to actually absorb different small, minute amount of different form together will give you the proper magnesium level as.
Right. There are a variety of forms that are available on magnesium, you know, throughout the marketplace and used in and by practitioners in their clinics. I'm curious if we have any insights on those forms, particularly as they affect availability in the body. So for example, you know, you could do a blood diagnostic test and you can measure serum magnesium, which is less relevant than magnesium levels in the red blood cells. Correct. And then there's the other issue that depending on what you're using magnesium for, is it getting and absorbed in the right place? So for example, if you're using magnesium for stress and anxiety, it would probably be of benefit to get into and across the blood-brain barrier. And I can imagine that all these different forms of magnesium may have different effects and different end results. Can you give us some insight on that spectrum of issues on bioavailability, differences, and sites of appearance?
Yeah, correct. The definition of bioavailability of magnesium goes beyond than if magnesium can get to the bloodstream. Magnesium had to get to the target tissue. First. And second, we need to also be mindful that functional magnesium is not magnesium bound to something else. We need to have functional magnesium, which is the free ionic magnesium. This is a functional magnesium. Uh-huh. And we have so many tissue have enough magnesium, but not enough free ionic magnesium. And remember that for energy, for ATP, magnesium has to be free ionic magnesium for it to bind to ATP and stabilize this ATP molecule for energy. And then most of this form, as you get to the bloodstream, they might get to the tissue, that's okay. But the problem here is so many form of magnesium don't really get to the brain at the speed required to maintain proper brain function. And when you go magnesium citrate, other form of magnesium, you find that if you're deficient in magnesium, let's say in the brain, it will not give you magnesium to the brain. It might trickle to the brain within a month or two, but if you need it to be there within a week or 2 or 3 weeks, then it's not a good form. So science went back to the drawing board and tried to screen different form of magnesium, and they found one form, magnesium threonate, that shows some promise to deliver magnesium to the brain. But then we have to think again, maybe there's other forms. So can we go screen 1,000, 2,000 forms, or should we consider finding the multi-form found in vegetables and plants and let nature do its way? Right. So we have so many symptoms of low magnesium. And people think that if I take magnesium, then I will resolve these symptoms. So if you're healthy and you have low magnesium, you might develop these symptoms. But if you have this symptom, does not mean they're only due to magnesium. So it's very important to remove magnesium from the equation as you go along and find treatment and the reason why you're having this symptom. This is especially true for symptoms relevant to central nervous system and so on. They are really multifactorial. And we definitely magnesium deficiency play a role, but not the only culprit in this symptoms. Yeah.
That's interesting. So many practitioners will talk about and limit their discussion on magnesium to availability, uptake, and use. But it's rare that you hear the discussion on where does it go and how quickly does it get there.
And what form? Is it ionic form yeah. or bound magnesium?
So yeah. It seems that if you were trying to look at, let's just call it, total body magnesium needs, these last two points are less critical. But if you're trying to address things related to central nervous system function or stress and anxiety, now you're talking about a very targeted and specific need, and timing becomes important. So is there data in the literature or that you're aware of that shows differences in timing and targeted delivery?
Yeah, because we know, like if when you take for animal work, for example, and same for human, if you go for animal work and you put an animal on magnesium deficiency for 2-3 weeks, you find a significant decrease in free ionic magnesium in the cerebrospinal fluid and in the brain tissue and so on. So it doesn't take much for magnesium to leach out from the brain. But it takes a month or two with different form to somehow replenish. give you an example for a patient with migraine. So this patient, they give them magnesium sulfate IV, and you can increase the magnesium, ionic magnesium level in the blood for 10 times, 20 times, 100 times. And when you're looking for in vivo imaging of the brain for free ionic magnesium, you find not barely 5-10% increase in magnesium. So that's that much the blood-brain barrier block kind of a quick increase in magnesium level. And this is important because magnesium act on ionic channel, and we don't want to change the electrochemistry of the brain sudden and so on. Right. So a small increase is important, should not be too much, and that's why the blood-brain barrier becomes a crucial part of it. And that's why a lot of magnesium form don't get to the brain. But sometimes the blood-brain barrier is so strong that create an issue, especially with the synthetic uniform of magnesium may not be adequate to bring magnesium.
Right.
So it becomes really a complicated issue there. But
So I guess the bottom line in that, number one is if a practitioner is going to be looking for forms of magnesium, probably the preferred most effective choice would be from a whole food matrix, plant-based magnesium might be the best and most effective to use, both in terms of availability, targeted use, and timing in general.
It's fair to say that in general, yeah. But there's always some condition, like if a patient have kind of a hypomagnesemia, which is a serious deficiency in magnesium, where the magnesium in the serum is very low.
Right.
So in this case, acute intervention with high dose targeted intervention become important.
Right.
But this is only like 5-10% in general population you see these cases. For the majority of patients, you don't need to go that right. acutely. You don't have to really push for side effects to get the benefit.
Oh, okay.
So whole food-based matrix with magnesium multiform remain the best way for long-term maintenance to avoid the patient to get into this kind of serious magnesium deficiency.
Let's talk a little bit about what that profile of the patient who may be more susceptible and have a greater need for magnesium. Can you describe the major patient profiles and issues that a practitioner would expect to consider magnesium for a certain patient?
Yeah, so if you have patient without any kind of physiological problem that actually prevent magnesium retention, like kidney problems, other metabolic problem, that hormonal problem, if you put this patient on one side, looking for the general population, then the profile of low magnesium or inadequacy in dietary intake of magnesium could translate easily to a series of symptoms. You can actually see the patients, and by simple questionnaire, you can figure out, yeah, you might have low magnesium, including, let's say, sleep problems, some mood problems. Some of them present with a sign of increased toxic burden because magnesium is important for so many phase two enzymes for detox and so on. You find issue with muscle weakness, fatigue, and all of it, like kind of sluggish. And then when you give them questionnaire for their dietary intake, you say, okay, what kind of food you eat for the past week or two, how much vegetables, processed food, and so on. You say, okay, wait a second, I have very good indication you might be under the magnesium inadequate intake. So maybe supplementation of magnesium makes sense.
You know, right now, a lot of practitioners would use magnesium, particularly for people that are feeling high amounts of stress and anxiety. What do you think about that, and what's the clinical science telling us about the benefit and the rational use of magnesium for those issues?
So if you have this stress or, let's say, central nervous system-related issues, the question here is, are these issues solely based on inadequate magnesium? For some cases, it is. For some cases, magnesium might have a kind of an impact on these symptoms. If you get the proper magnesium form that will get to the brain in a good amount and can reverse the low functional magnesium. With other type of patients, their stress and their mood issues and behavior issue or sleep issues, magnesium only play a role. So it becomes so important to remove this factor so actually you have better chance to treat the real source of this issue.
Right, right.
Because sometimes it's very hard to improve sleep, restlessness, and mood issue under magnesium deficient patient.
Right.
So we really have to remove these factors so we have better chance for a better clinical outcome.
Okay.
It's become important.
You know, in considering that there was an underlying cause of some health issue, like stress and anxiety has an underlying issue of a lot of different conditions or changes metabolically even, Is it fair to say then that you know, magnesium should be considered, you know, part of an overall solution to fix the underlying cause, but it's not the single solution? And if a patient presents and a practitioner may be worried about a lot of the things that you're talking about, stress, anxiety, sleep, just foundational metabolic mm-hmm. support, do you see magnesium as part of an overall system of a nutrition regimen? And if so, what other factors, what other nutrients and ingredients would you suggest should be considered along with the use of magnesium?
So yeah, definitely, as I mentioned before, in general population, magnesium become a more and more problem, especially magnesium deficiency. And then that actually creates a soup of different problems and complicate already existing problems and difficulty the patient already suffering, like glucose control, stress, anxiety, and the list goes on. So we're adding an extra kind of factor that push our health trajectory off the chart. So it's going to be very hard to manage the other issue that we're trying to manage. So that's very important then. But the question here is when the physician prescribe, let's say, one form of magnesium, we say, take this form because you need some magnesium based on our questionnaire. But is this form helping the patient? So you think that you saw the magnesium problem and now you try to fix the other issues. But to your surprise, you have not fixed the magnesium problem first because it's not a proper form to be absorbed, not a proper form to be give you the free ionic magnesium, may not be the proper form to get to the brain or the target you're trying to target. Right. So basically, you have the false assumption that you actually took care of this factor, but in reality, you did not. And that's become frustrating for the patient and for the physician. And that's why when we say about multi-form plant-based as nature intended, maybe in this way you can be more ensured that actually you solve this problem. And sometimes you solve this problem, but you don't see effect on clinical outcome. So we have to guarantee that this factor has been removed so you can focus all your energy fixing other factors relevant to the symptom that your patient is presenting.
And so what do you think would be the most effective way to make sure that issue is addressed? Is it start with magnesium first and then go through a series of nutrition regimen? Or can it be included as, you know, let's just call it bundle of care or co-therapy with other key nutrients?
Yeah, for magnesium, there is no reason to start before or after. Just like whenever you think that the patient will benefit from magnesium supplement, magnesium should be given. And we're not talking about large dose of magnesium. The dietary intake gap could be filled by 70-80% of patients by having only 100 milligram magnesium extra per day. It's not like we're asking for 200-300 milligram. We don't need much. Yeah. Actually, the more you give magnesium in single dose, the less magnesium is absorbed. So if you have a kind of 60% absorption of your dose, go less than 100 milligram. As you go more, it drop the percentage of absorption become 20%, 30% become very poor.
Right, right. I think that's an important point that you bring too in the use of magnesium as you know, for therapeutic benefit. You know, for whatever reason, people think that more is better. But particularly in the case of magnesium, there's really kind of an optimal way to dose, and it's not mega dosing.
Exactly.
But it's moderate amounts. And in fact, you know, the NHANES report that shows magnesium deficiency in that 70-80% range of Americans, at least, would also show that their deficiency really only ranges between about 20-30% of a gap of the recommended daily intake.
Correct.
So it just emphasizes your point.
Yeah, but 20-30% of the gap, some people say, okay, only 20% more magnesium is required, so magnesium is not that important. But animal work showed, actually, if you put animal on only 10% magnesium deficiency, so it means you decrease by their intake by only 10%, which is really not much, and you find an effect on free ionic magnesium in the brain tissue and so on. So we know that even 10% less than RDI might actually have a severe impact on health. So even we talk about 10%, it's significant 10%.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an important point. So, in general, is it fair to say that those patients who have underlying metabolic challenges or metabolic systems that aren't optimized, individuals who are going through detox or purification programs, individuals that are experiencing some stress and anxiety, even highly active individuals that have higher metabolic challenges or stress, would be key candidates for consideration of the use of magnesium?
Definitely, yeah. and all of the list above, we still, you don't need to have mega dose of magnesium because the body have very good ability to retain magnesium if you have all the physiology is working well. So we still don't have to give it more. And the more you give mega dose, the issue of how long you can sustain such a high dose for the patient. Yeah. So basically, a lot of patients after a month or two, they drop because they start to feel some side effect.
Yeah.
Because you still have magnesium from the diet. So at the time you eat like good magnesium-rich meal and you're taking your magnesium supplement, it's a matter of here and there you start to have GI issue, even though before you not have it. So patients say like, I'm going to give up. I'm always have this borderline GI issues and it's not worth it. So they drop. So what we really need to do is to go low dose of magnesium, but for long term, you improve actually compliance for the patients, and you don't really shock the system one day here and one day there.
Right.
So again, low dose of magnesium within 50 to 100 milligram per day, multi-form, preferably from, of course, a whole food matrix, whole food, and then you can have kind of insurance that you're getting the basic need for your magnesium. So then if you have any other health issue, then you can already remove magnesium factor and you can really deal with the other main issue you're trying to fix.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. You know, when I think about magnesium, you know, we think as clinical nutritionists in the last, say, 15 years, that magnesium is this hot new nutrient ingredient that needs to be taken. But, you know, there's a product in the United States in the 50s, 60s, in early 70s called Milk of Magnesia.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty popular. Product you may remember on another product called Geritol, which is primarily delivering iron. But so what do you think happened? So in the 50s and 60s, Milk of Magnesia was kind of an iconic product in American culture, but yet the food processing changes hadn't compromised, you know, food systems and availability of magnesium from whole food sources. So what was the big why do you think the big push was needed in the 50s and 60s versus now where we have a real clinical and physiological need that has clearly been demonstrated even beyond what they knew in the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, that's the whole nature of nutrition science.
Yeah.
We have like one couple of data showing there's some lead somewhere, and then people jump over, and then we can just start to say, we need the magnesium, here's the fourth magnesium, and you go. And as the science and research develop, you find, okay, we solve one problem with this product, but the other problem remains. I mean, okay, we see more magnesium, less GI issue, but when you dig deeper, magnesium did not get where it's supposed to get. The symptoms remain, the frustration remain, and the problem was not being solved because the problem is multi-layered for magnesium.
Yeah.
It's not only taking the magnesium. You have all the steps to get the benefit of magnesium, or at least to remove magnesium as a factor in other multi-factor problems.
So the concept of the 50s and 60s of the need for the benefit of magnesium was good, but the reason...
Yeah.
Technology just demonstrates why it's so important.
Yeah,
so
in the 60s, they realized the importance of magnesium, and we have a source of magnesium, so it became like, okay, let's go for it.
Right.
And they went for it.
Right.
And at the end, it was not clinically impactful, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
Like the clinical outcome, and it has to be meaningful clinical outcome.
Right.
That's the golden...
Interesting. So it's kind of the old adage, what goes around comes around, but whoever spends the time putting together right clinical evidence and understanding of that would basically provide better solutions in clinical
care. So it took us like 100 years of magnesium research to realize that nature design, the way nature actually brought this magnesium multiform, is that still ideal for how we evolved.
Yeah. And great, the best food sources for magnesium?
Green leafy vegetables. Yeah. They are really a good source of magnesium.
Yeah.
And some meat products. Avoid processed foods. Fruit is fine, but always have to make the balance of fruits, the sugar, and the green leafy with the other anti-nutrients and so on. So it's all like balanced diet, good lifestyles, and make sure that the vegetable and fruit, you're buying them to be organic, if possible, and to make sure they're not like stored in your fridge for like a month or so on, and eat as much as possible food from the proper season, like seasonal food, not like stored food and so on, because all of them actually deplete nutrients, not only magnesium, but other nutrients and so on.
Well, great. You've been listening to HolisticManners.com. We've been talking with Dr. Bassem Al-Kador about the important role, needs, and gaps of magnesium. Thanks for joining us today, Bassem.
Thank you, John.
And thanks to our listeners for checking in with us.